from stpetecatalyst.com.
Hey there, I'm Bill DeYoung, and it is the Catalyst Sessions again for another fabulous Monday. Today, my guest is Dr. Hank Hine, the Executive Director of the Salvador Dali Museum. Hello, sir.
Hello. Hi, Bill.
Always good to see you again. I think the last time I spoke with you, you and Laura were on this program, and it's been closing in on 3 months, two and a half.
Yeah, that was a front porch conversation back in the days when we thought this would be over in a few weeks. And we were all doing our part to keep this virus from spreading, and here we are.
There's only so many ways you can say, well, here we are. And I think, you know, this is, I think, our 73rd show today of the Catalyst Sessions. And again, I thought this was going to be temporary, and it's going to end one day, of course. But I thought that, yeah, we just check in with everybody from time to time. Hey, I'm still here. You're still here. We're still here.
Yeah. We are.
Dr. Hine, I want to get right to it. You reopened to the public on the 1st of July. And yes. I think really the people who are watching this would like to, you know, hear from you. Kind of, you're open Wednesdays through Sundays, I think, just a couple days a week. How's it been going?
Well, you know, we had to change a lot of things for the safety of our visitors, for the safety of our staff, and then, you know, facing the situation that there are going to be fewer visitors than there were, say, this time last year. So we are now only open 5 days a week. We're Wednesday through Sunday.
Yeah.
But we added another late evening. So we're open Friday evenings until 8, and we've always been open on Thursdays. So we open an hour later. We have a special hour for seniors. But we're down to 5 days, and it seems to be enough.
Does it seem to be? I mean, how well attended is it?
We're getting about what we thought, which is like less than half of what we would have in a normal time period.
Yeah. And everybody's socially distancing and wearing masks are required and all of that stuff. It doesn't seem that weird to be in a Dali museum and have things on your face.
Yeah, and we actually have a mask in which the mustache is pre-printed, so
that's
feel right at home. Yeah, no, people are very agreeable about the masks. They understand it's to protect themselves, to protect others, you know, and we've got a staff that we care very much about, and we all want to stay safe, too. People are very good about it. We have made some changes in the routes. It's kind of a single course, a unicursal route through the museum, so that you start in one place and take the time you like, but you end up in another place, so you're not crisscrossing and getting too close to people. So it seems to work.
And the senior hours is what, 10 in the morning to 11 on Thursdays and
Wednesdays
Fridays? Wednesdays and Thursdays.
Yeah.
And that's sort of to give people 65 and older a chance to sort of not feel threatened by crowds or potential kind of thing. That's working now. You know, all well and good, but I mean, be honest with me, it's just kind of frustrating, isn't it?
You know, it's terribly frustrating. We long for the world we knew, where we were with people. You know, I have a hard time not reaching out and shaking somebody's hand when I see them. It's really just that sense of touch and community is so much a part of who we are. I think as human beings, it's very, very difficult to adjust to a world where you stay apart and stay apart. And of course, we have kids at home, and they are sequestered, and you know, we're wondering what this is doing to them and their social impulses. You don't want to give the sense that, you know, other people are dangerous. Other people are, you know, because this COVID is so beguiling. This idea that you can be asymptomatic and infectious makes everyone slightly afraid of each other, and it's a very, very unhealthy situation we're going through right now.
Would you say that, I think like a lot of us optimistic is the right word, that, you know, eventually it will end, that there will be a vaccine. I mean, can you even in your wildest, darkest dreams imagine that this would be a new reality for, you know, the rest of our lives?
No,
I don't mean to sound deep and disturbing or anything, but you know.
I can't imagine that, and I don't think that would be the case. I think this has an end. You know, we've come to believe in technology. I think that the medical science is going to be able to solve this. I think a lot more people are going to get the infection than we hoped, but I think at the end we're going to solve it, and hopefully we'll learn lessons so that we're ready for the next one, because what we know about human activity on this planet is that we've stirred things up incredibly, and there will be more and more pathogens that, you know, have come out of the forest because there's no more being sequestered in the forest. Everything's being driven by humanity and its expansion. And, you know, just like the Ebola, there are going to be more problems to solve. And I hope we can learn how to do it better. Yeah.
Let's talk about more immediate things. You, I was really impressed with the virtual tour on the Dolly website. And it made me wonder, in a slightly comical way, why you'd ever want to reopen again anyway. I mean, can't you just, you know, zero in on things? And it's a cool experience. I mean, I wish there was more to it. It's very cool.
Well, you know, we've been invested in technology for many years.
Oh, yes. Yes, I know.
We know that there's, you know, particularly younger people, there is a true reality to the virtual. You know, the old saying is that if it's not virtual, then it's not real to them. You know, if they haven't taken a selfie, they haven't been there. We know that that's part of, you know, the adaptation of the human being to this new technology, that's they can use it. And we've been using it in combination with the kind of singular experience of being in the presence of an object of which there are only one, and which is right here, right now. So we have kind of a double whammy. You get the power of the object, and then you also get the opportunity to experience things digitally, which gives you another kind of reality, which is
Interesting, you know, your history with the art books, and which is, you know, a kind of reproduction of one of a kind items. That's interesting to me, that to think that conceivably there could be a generation or generations that only knows art that way.
Yeah,
that doesn't have to go and stand in front of the Mona Lisa and go, wow, that's it. They can see it in a book or see it virtually, see it on the screen.
Sure. And that's the way, I mean, because of our population and the limited resources for travel, that's the way most art objects will be seen. And I don't regret that at all. I think it's the more that people can see and the more they can experience, the better. Still, there is something wonderful about being in the presence of something. It's what the art historians call the aura of the individual object, the thing that can't be replaced by a reproduction. But the reproduction has its own special quality as well.
Well, plus you get to spin around the room. You have opened two new, as I count, tell me if I'm wrong, the Lee Miller Photography Exhibit, I think, came online in April or May.
You know, it was due to, Bill, and we were supposed to open that in the beginning of May, last day of April, and having to make the cuts that we needed to cut to, you know, stay viable, we asked them to postpone it, the collectors to postpone.
Oh, it's not up yet. I mean, no.
So we really put forward the show that we had to take down, which was Midnight in Paris.
Oh, yes.
Midnight in Paris, there are two films that pertain to it. One is a film that we made at Cassis.
Yes.
You know, between 10 at night and 5 in the morning. A terrific film which invents something that never happened but might have happened, a conversation between Gala, Dolly's wife, and André Breton.
Yeah, that's Roxanne Fay and Ned Arbel-Snell.
Yeah, they were fabulous. And that's a 30-minute film where you really get the context of what was going on and the power plays and the personalities. Yeah. And then we made another film about the exhibit itself, which was lots of paintings, sculptures, and we had that film in the show. So for a long time, that was people's experience of Midnight in Paris. You could see this 4-minute video on our site, and that together with all the other things that could be accessed, classes for children, our innovation labs we had on online. So those things have been really helpful in keeping people together, but it doesn't substitute for being here in person.
Well, you've opened Dolly Sacred Science.
Yes.
Can you tell us about that one? Let's get that some ink.
Yeah, this is an exhibition of really little seen images of Dolly. He did them as portfolios of kind of multimedia prints. Some of them are on vellum. Some of them have jewels attached. Two of them are in these big sculptural cases. One has a bas-relief sculpture in aluminum of an image of Moses. And this is from a text by Freud called Moses and Monotheism. And Dolly made images for that. He also made images for a book on astrology. And these are wonderful, colorful, incredibly imaginative images. He did something on mythology. He did a book on the birth of the nation of Israel. That was a commission that he did in the 60s. And these things are rarely seen. So we filled up the Huff and Majid wings of our museum with these things to give something entirely new. And people are really enjoying them.
Is this from the collection, or is this something new that you brought in?
This is from our collection. You know, our collection is quite vast. We have over 2,000 objects, and these 40, 50, 60 objects are part of that 2,000, and we don't bring them out that much because our space is so limited. We need to have more space to show more work.
Well, that's something I want to get to in a minute, but I did want to ask, just because I don't know this, okay? I didn't know that the Lee Miller photography thing had never gone up. Is that going to come back at some point, do you think?
Yeah, we're going to do it next summer. So the same time we scheduled, end of April, early May next year, God willing, we'll all be in a position to do what we wanted to do this year.
Do you send things out on the road? I forget what the term is. Do you loan them out to other museums? Yeah, I mean,
we do.
I just always wanted to know this. I didn't know that.
You know, it's really an interesting thing. There's a kind of currency that you gain by loaning works. Mm-hmm. So we loan works locally. There's a show still with our works down at Selby Gardens. These are prints of botanical nature by Dolly.
Oh, yeah. And that's in Sarasota, folks. Let's tell me.
In Sarasota. They've done a wonderful job. And we're going to send that same group to a botanical garden in Denver. Then more internationally, we loan quite widely to big Dolly shows. It's kind of impossible, because of the importance of our collection, to do a major Dolly show without loans from the Dolly Museum. So we've loaned to the great museums of the world. We've loaned to the Louvre, to the Pompidou, to the Tate, to the Reina Sofia in Spain, to the National Museum in Tokyo. The Bellas Artes in Rio de Janeiro. We've in Mexico as well. But you can't do a major Dolly show without works from us. And we try to limit the number of works that we share, because people are coming here to see our works, but nonetheless we loan, and that in that same way we're able to borrow from those same institutions. And that's why we could borrow from the Pompidou, we could borrow their whole surrealist collection, as we did with our Midnight in Paris show. We can borrow from the Picasso Museum, from the Tate, from the Moderna Museet in Denmark, in Sweden, from the Munch Museum. So we are players in an international arena because of the importance of our collection and because of our willingness to share.
That's, you filled in a few blanks for me there along the way, because of the various surrealist things, the exhibitions that you do every year. I'm thinking, yes, Bill. Duh, that has to come from somewhere else. Are there other major Dolly exhibits around the world? I mean, these may be silly questions, but maybe people don't know this. I mean, you guys aren't the be all and end all. There are others out there. Is that correct?
Well, there's a the second great collection of Dali is in Spain, in Figueres, in the Costa Brava near the border with France on the Mediterranean. Mm-hmm. And that was the institution to which Dali willed all his intellectual property and what was left in his studio that he hadn't sold when he died. So we partnered with them. Their main task is to preserve the legacy of Dali, and they, you know, enforce copyright here and there. We work with them quite a bit, and we've put on international shows with them. We've put on shows with them in Japan. We're working on one in China. We've done them in Brazil, France, Spain, England, Germany. So yeah, we are in Hungary. We did one in Hungary. So we're very cooperative with them. And there are shows currently. Right now, I don't think there's any great show of Dali going on in the world. It's it's here in St. Petersburg, if you want to see Dali.
But the same thing. Well, yeah, okay. There's something I was thinking while you were talking, and you just led me to think that. It is, oh, I don't know. Yeah, I'm from St. Petersburg, and this is like blowing air, but I'll say it anyway. It's like another duh. 50 years ago, the idea of a world-class art museum like this in little dorky old St. Petersburg, nobody, huh? You know, so you know, kudos to you and your board and all the people who made this happen, because I'm thinking about the guy sitting there in the Tate or in somebody in Tokyo or at the Louvre going, yes, let's call those people in St. Petersburg and see if we, you know, unthinkable a few decades ago before this happened. You got to be kind of proud of that.
We are. We're proud. Well, we're proud to be in St. Petersburg. We're proud that the world knows us, and we're even more proud when they come and you know, see what else the city has to contribute and offer. You know, we're glad they're going to see this great new pier. We love that they go to the other art museums when they come to see the Dali. There's a lot to experience in this city. Go see the murals. You know, go to the glass shops. You know, there's just a tremendous amount here, and I'm proud of our restaurants, all the things that are, you know, are having such a hard time right now.
Have you been to the new pier yet? Have you seen it?
Yes. Yeah. I've been twice. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. I love the plantings, and
that's what knocked me out was the green space. It was so great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so spacious. And you know, it has ambitions to be open 24 hours a day. So it's going to be interesting to see.
Well, I'm glad the security there is not my problem. Let's see.
Yeah.
You know. Okay. Hey, you know, I had another sort of, there's one more thing I want to get to that's really important, but before I get there, you're married to the ED of another top quality museum here, as we all know, and congratulations to Laura and wishing her success on her latest venture, which we probably shouldn't talk about here, but good luck to her. And, the thing is, there are five or six really great art museums here in town now. You guys are kind of it. You know, you guys are kind of the main tourist draw here in town. And don't bother denying this, but I wonder if sometimes you sit home and you think, the James is nice and the MFA is nice, but we're the biggest. I mean, you must be proprietarily proud of that. You don't really even have to answer this, Hank. It was just a silly question. You know, and you kind of got Laura's talking about, we're doing this at the James. And you went, but I got the Dali. You
know? Well, yeah, so I've got the Dali, but that's a big responsibility. I think we're proud that we can, you know, raise the tide. And as they say, all boats rise in a rising tide.
Exactly. So
You know, that's great. But we do see, we feel a responsibility with it too. That's why I was working with the mayor to create a joint discount pass to all the museums so that people would say, oh, really? I didn't know about those. To use some of the money for marketing of the other museums with this pass. And I think it got kind of, we started about this time last year and it got taken up by the city administration, and then it went to Visit St. Pete Clearwater, and I don't know what's happened with it, but we were driving this thing to say, look, there are going to be 9 museums all in walking distance, and that's pretty incredible. So why don't we let people know about those?
instead of using images of the beach everywhere, right? I
mean, right.
Duncan McClellan talks about that all the time. Like, you know, why don't we promote this aspect of what we do? But I think people know that the Dalai is here. You can use, you know, the effect you have on people to bring attention to the others.
Yeah.
You know,
and subsequently,
lift all boats.
When people sit down and look at our orientation film, we do advertise the other amenities, and mm-hmm. you know, and that's a part of who we are and what we want to do for this community.
Let's talk about the expansion, the proposed expansion, if you will. I have no idea where anything is anymore the last couple of months, but where are we on that? And do you expect that's going to go forward the way you wanted it to with the right amount of money when things resume to normal? Yeah, well,
I don't think anything on this planet is going the way people wanted it to go.
Well, touche, right?
But yeah. I think that, you know, we're still moving towards that goal.
Yeah.
I think it's the right thing for our museum and the right thing for this community to make this thing happen. Just to give a little background on it, this is an expansion of the existing facility, really almost a freestanding new structure that would be dedicated to a kind of digitorium, a digital experiences based in Dali, or based in the ideas of surrealism. It would be interactive, that would be an orientation for people to what art is about and you know, how to approach it, and then really fun at the same time. Lots of things to do. And the county agreed that this would drive a lot more visitors, and so they allocated half of the cost of it. But now, you know, their resources, I'm sure, are rather challenged right now because they come from heads in beds, and since middle March, there are very few people, or
very few heads and beds,
many fewer than they need.
Yeah.
So we're carrying on the conversation and trying to adjust the calendar to make this thing happen.
So it's 20,000 square feet plus a new parking garage.
Yeah, parking, you know, adequate to, we don't have enough parking now. And with the Mahaffey Garage and their program, we're often just not able to accept visitors. And that is in a normal world. Now we have.
Well, that's the caveat for all of this, but yeah, of course.
So, the parking, but yeah, about 20,000 square feet of new exhibition space and places for people to convene and use our innovation labs and have the experience, the digital technology. And really, you know, our emphasis is on kind of the leading edge of that. You know, we're working with VR and augmented reality and artificial intelligence, all the things that are at the frontier to make art experiences palpable.
So just to wrap up this part of the conversation, if let's say the COVID, the pandemic, the blanket is lifted, let's say by January, you know, which is optimistic, but you never know, right? Is your timeline kind of in the wind now as far as when that might happen? Or can you say, once this is done, we will have the money by such and such? Or is it impossible to say that now?
Well, I think once we're back to normal visitation, the thing will happen rapidly.
Yeah.
That is, when our community is back to normal visitation, when the hotels, you know, are running 97% occupancy like they do for so much of the year. When that's back and running, then this thing's going to fall in place. Meanwhile, we're pushing it forward, reminding people about it, and making plans for what will go in it, building the technology.
I'm picturing, you said that you would house collections there too. I mean, would there be more exhibition galleries, or is it all digital and innovation labs and learning and technology, or is there going to be an art gallery in there too?
Well, the way we're thinking of it is that this will all be digital. This will be
all digital.
Yeah, all digital, unique experience there. And then we'll be able to actually create some new spaces in the current building to show art, where we're now having spaces for people to convene, like our theater and our community room. We probably can repurpose those to show art and have the new space near the garage be the place for for common use.
Where's the space here? I've seen the rendering. Is it over where the parking lot is now? Is that?
Yeah, we'd be building on top of the existing triangular space that only has 120 parking places. This would have 400 going up.
Wow. What's we're almost out of time here, but I just want to ask you a couple of quick things. In a good year, a great year, pre-COVID year and post-COVID year, what's attendance like? I know you guys bring a lot of people in, and I know you know these numbers, Hank. How many people come to visit you every year?
Well, last year it was close to 400,000. The year before it was a little over 400,000. So it hovers around 400,000 visitors a year. It's seasonally weighted, in March up to the Grand Prix. And then again in April, it's really busy. Mm-hmm. And September and October are slow. We'll get 3,000 visitors a day in the peak period in spring. Wow.
Do you have a breakdown of like how many people come internationally and or come just to see the Dolly and then experience other things in St. Petersburg? Yeah, you are a destination is what I mean.
That's what really makes us proud. We know those figures exactly from polls, not only mm-hmm. polls that we take ourselves, but that the county has done. We find that over 60% of people coming from out of area are coming to St. Petersburg expressly to see the Dolly Museum.
Wow.
But then they stay 4 days on the average. So they're going to restaurants, they're gassing up their cars, they're going to other museums, they're shopping, they forgot suntan lotion, they got to get a new pair of shoes. That's what drives an economy. And we know that culture is the heart and soul of a life of a community.
Of course.
We also are economic drivers is really satisfying.
Well, Hank Hine, I can't think of anything else to ask you other than, how's life at home? You guys, you and your kids, everybody getting along great? And
we're busy. We're busy, as you can imagine. And like everybody else, trying to figure out how to get through the next period and what to do about schools. And
So let's just remind folks that the Dolly Museum is open now Wednesdays through Sundays. Friday is the late night. And how late do you open Friday?
Until 8 o'clock Thursday and Friday until 8 o'clock.
Have you ever thought about doing like overnights? What a weird, freaky place to be overnight.
Yeah, we have done that. We've done a reading of Dolly's Secret Life where we read it for 24 hours and you could come in your pajamas. And
I hope you reschedule that. I may have to do that one in the fall.
Yeah, great fun.
Dr. Hine, thank you so much for your time. And a pleasure. I'll check in with you in another couple of months. And
thank you so much. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks.
We'll see you again soon. Okay, bye-bye.
From stpetecatalyst.com.